Hello and welcome to another edition of Viva Politics Podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by a Generation Xer. That would be me, a veteran political consultant, Dr. Laura Barberena. And
hi, me, the Viva Politics Office Millennial, Lauren Coronado.
And you are just like in a lovely top today. It's all patterned and very lovely.
Thank you. As we found out this week, I can't be trusted to wear white shirts. So that was fun.
This is true. Earlier this week on your way into the office spilled a big red.
Coming back from lunch, all happy. I had my little to-go cup. I was like, you know what? It's hot. I'm going to get big red today and be fun.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know what Big Red is, in case you're not listening, if you're listening outside of the Texas area, it's this wonderful strawberry concoction that's bright red, and it made quite the lovely pattern on your white shirt, and then we had to go to a little mixer happy hour
at a cool bar, and I was panicking the whole rest of the afternoon because I had this big old pink spot in the middle of my white shirt. Like, I was wearing a suit. It was going to be a good day, and then it was not. So in a jam.
But you were creative.
I was very creative. I put my shirt on backwards and just had like the seam down the front, like it was part of the design.
No one knew. No one was the wiser that you had the shirt on backwards.
I just had to keep my jacket on all night, even though it was 110 degrees.
Yes, that was obviously a very creative way to handle that. So very proud, millennial. Way to think on your feet.
It's what we do here.
Way to think on your feet. So I'm actually very excited about today's topic. We've been talking about this in the office for quite a while now, talking about religious imagery in political communication. It's interesting because we talk often, like those three things you aren't supposed to talk about in mixed company: sex, religion, and politics.
And that's all we talk about.
Literally. But this is interesting because there is so much talk about religion and politics, yet we see very little images of religion in politics. So, in fact, as we were preparing for the podcast, I was sort of looking up, and there really has, to my knowledge, been any studies in academia about religious imagery used in political communications. There's, you know, there's a kind of a very famous book called The God Strategy, How Religion Became a Political Weapon in America. That's by David, I'm going to say his last name wrong, Domke and Kevin Coe. But in this book, which it's a wonderful book, and it really chronicles religion in politics over almost over a century, but it looks at political speech, how religion's been adopted in party platforms, how it's transformed into visits to audience of faith. So in other words, politicians going to church, right? They go to church.
They go to multiple churches. It's a whole, who's going to staff him this Sunday?
Right, exactly, right. And we see a lot of that here in local politics where they make the rounds and go to church and visit church. But we really see, we don't see necessarily religious imagery in politics so much. Again, we invoke God. Right. There's a lot of invoking of God and all these things that we should be doing. And there's a lot of talk about it, but there's very little imagery of it.
I found a few essays about imagery, but no hard like statistics and facts about the causes of using religious imagery. I just kind of found the steps of how to use it.
What did it say?
Okay.
I'm interested.
So I found this one essay that was really great. It was by Paul Tillich. It's called Religious Language as Symbols. So the first step, you need to explore the difference between a sign and a symbol and what that means. And then the second one would be the typical function of symbols is to open up a new reality in the same fashion that art does. So using religion to open a new reality in politics.
That's fascinating. You know, and part of the reason why, and we'll come back to the next steps, but you know, part of the reason why this sort of came into our consciousness was because someone running for a local office did a mailer and they had a picture of the Virgin Mary on there, like the Virgen, right? And I saw it and I was like, what the, like,
it's so easy to fall into that trap too. Like, it's art.
Wouldn't you have
and it's beautiful and you want to look at it, but also there's real meaning attached to that art for people.
Yeah. In fact, I think my first comment was, did the Virgin Mary endorse him? Yeah. I didn't realize she could do endorsements. Right. Okay. Well, I'm gonna like add that to my repertoire.
I feel like she was off limits, but okay.
Yeah, like I don't know. Like, is that, should you be endorsing in a primary? I just don't think that's right. But then I thought, oh, this is weird. Like, I wonder how people are going to react to it. So I went to my comadre Teresa, her mom, who's a little bit older generation and a native of Mexico. And I showed her and I said, you know, what do you think about this? And she was like, oh, no. Like, she was like super offended by it. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Like a Mexican native kind of offended by, yeah, the use of the imagery. But then I was over like another group of older women who were, it's completely anecdotal, no science behind this.
Yeah.
But I was like, hey, so did you see this mailer? What did you think? And they said, oh, I just loved it. Oh, the Virgin Mary. Oh, it was so beautiful.
See, and I was like my grandma would be in the second camp. Like, ay, qué lindo. And like put it on her wall with the rest of the Virgins in her house.
Yeah, it just seemed so interesting to me that, and then I started thinking, well, gosh, like how would people react if, you know, if you were just put Jesus Christ on, mm-hmm, on a mailer or something, like how would people react to it? I mean, obviously for a Christian audience, but yeah, so I thought that, yeah, was just very, I mean, we often tout people's resumes and part of their resumes includes,
yeah, their community religion, involvement, right, their community, being on the parish council or whatever.
Right, or what church they're members, mm-hmm, of, you know, et cetera. But, you know, it's like, let's just stick the Virgin Mary's mug right on there. And, you
was
know.
Was it, like, glittery in it, though?
No, it was not glittery. No. It was not point? Glittery. I know. And it was just, I found it very fascinating. So let's go back to your steps.
Okay, so step there, three, the message associated with the image. So religious symbols open up the experience of the dimension of the human soul and penetrate the supreme reality relating to divinity. So having...
Whoa, that's kind of, right, deep.
That is really deep. So it's kind of, what does that mean? To me, that means when you see the Virgen next to like someone's policy platform, that would kind of in your mind associate it as divine.
Really?
Yeah. What does it mean to you?
No, I think that's actually extremely profound, because you think about it, what if that platform is dealing with things like a woman's right to choose? Mm-hmm. Like suddenly, you know, if that platform is talking about a woman's ability to control her own body, that's part of a party platform.
Oh,
next to the
Virgen. Even deeper next, I'm sorry, to the Virgen,
I'm sorry.
She answered the call.
Yeah. I, you know, that's extremely fascinating. Extremely fascinating. And then actually, does that mean as well, like if you put the Virgen or Christ or any, right, other religious imagery next to a photo of a politician, does that mean they're somehow divine? Which is what I was joking and just saying, oh, that they endorse him, right?
But
right.
Subconsciously, does it create that meaning for people when they, yeah, see it, especially if you are religious?
You know, in my own dissertation, while my dissertation didn't really focus on photographs of newspapers, mm-hmm, in my dissertation, I looked at the immigration marches of 2006 and how the newspapers covered it. And I noticed, and I didn't, it was actually a paper that I eventually wanted to tease out, but I haven't gotten a chance to do it. But I was looking at how when religious imagery was in the photographs of a newspaper article, so, mm-hmm, say, for instance, if they were carrying a cross, right, or somehow invoking religious imagery as part of their protest, mm-hmm, that the paper was a little, the coverage of it, whether it was in English or Spanish, mm-hmm, tend to be more compassionate. Mm-hmm. So I found that kind of a trending. But
oh,
of course,
wow,
it was just this
that
little
is
thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, like, because it changes the narrative.
Reporter.
Right. It changes, yeah, the narrative, right? So it's like if you have people protesting an action, for instance, but they're bearing a cross, right? Mm-hmm. Or holding up a giant photograph of the Virgen or Jesus.
Well, wouldn't that,
yeah,
feel like that would kind of create the narrative that they're suffering? They're bearing that cross.
Exactly.
So how are you going to, you know, be a dick and call them out while they're suffering?
Yeah, it's like, hey, yeah, these kids are like, you know,
yeah,
off of school and out protesting, but they're holding the picture of the Virgen. So, yeah, somehow, you know, but it does. It does change sort of the narrative and how people, mm-hmm, will describe things. So interesting.
So
is there
interesting
anything else in your
There's
research?
There's two more steps.
I want to see.
The next thing is this message transcendental? So is the message divine?
Hmm. Interesting. You know, I had the opportunity during my master's program to travel to El Salvador, and a famous archbishop there, mm-hmm, Oscar Romero, was assassinated on the altar during mass, partially because of, you know, his involvement in politics and an idea of what was called liberation theology.
Mm-hmm.
and there had been a large massacre of Jesuits priests there, and it was really at that time seen as an assault on the Catholic, these Catholic priests who were becoming politically involved. Mm-hmm. And so while we look at, again, as you're going through those points, and I'm thinking about, okay, this is sort of politicians invoking religion. Mm-hmm. What happens when religion invokes politics, mm-hmm. right? So in this case, we saw the assassination of a archbishop. And then here locally, our local archbishop recently had some tweets.
Oh, I love those.
So Archbishop Gustavo, who's our local archbishop, mm-hmm. recently tweeted, I think just, you know, his anger and frustration about what's been going on of recent with some of the
immigration and mass shootings.
And he called out the president specifically, only later to delete the tweets and then issue an apology. And I thought that was very interesting mm-hmm. because, you know, can we really separate? Well, that actually might be a whole other show, to be honest, to talk about, you know, how we take something back once we deliver it mm-hmm. in the political square, the political arena, when you say something and it's like you want to take it back. In fact, let's make a note. Let's do a show on that, because I think that's important. In this case, it was the case of a religious leader. But the fact that, you know, that he, as a religious leader, was calling out a politician carries that sense of divinity, right? It carries that sense of, like, morality, despite what you think about Catholic priests or the Catholic Church, you know, still, I mean, him as an individual, he does carry that.
And then he had to so carefully walk it back, which, I don't know, felt kind of, maybe it came from somewhere higher, because what he was saying on Twitter was really in line with Catholicism.
Right. And we think about,
like, he should have had no reason to walk it back other than politics.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because we think about the Catholic religion, and it's deeply rooted in social justice. Mm-hmm. And his comments certainly were
rooted in social justice.
and he had to walk them back. Yeah. And I would love to be able to ask him, like, did you walk that back because somehow you had this divine intervention from above?
Or did someone
email you?
Yeah. We're just getting a lot of strongly worded emails.
Yeah, that said, what the? Or what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
Would Jesus walk it back? I don't know.
I think he would have gone harder.
What's our last one?
And so, okay, the last one I think is really interesting, and I want to talk about this in specifically with politicians. Using religious imagery, does that make your message immune to criticism from outsiders?
Oh, yeah. Because it is kind of difficult, right? Uh-huh. So, like, let's take...
You're attacking God when you attack them.
Right. Or even so, like, when they try to marry themselves so much so that you see this mailer with the Virgin on there, mm-hmm. but you dislike this guy's politics, to someone who sees him, he's achieved this divinity because he's got her with her, if you attack him, somehow you're attacking the religion.
Yeah, he stands for what God stands for, so how are you going to attack him?
Right, right.
Or her.
Right. Do it too. Which is interesting, because I remember we have a local priest here, Father David, who is incredible. Mm-hmm. he's like raises tons of money for the Catholic Church for incredible causes. And I always tell him, Father David, you need to run for political office. And he just laughs at me, right? He's like, no. But I mean, can you imagine how convoluted that would be if you had a priest running for, say, mayor?
Yeah.
like because what would you do? Like if you had a mayor, like a candidate running for office who was a mayor who happened to be a priest, uh-huh. like how could you attack them on their like
or
their
as a member of that religion, how do you vote against them?
Right like that makes
There's
you a bad
a Catholics in San Antonio.
Yeah, it'd make you a bad Catholic if you don't vote for the Catholic candidate. But interesting, like when we think about presidential politics, mm-hmm. Kennedy, when he ran, the fact that he was Catholic was a huge, huge thing, right? It was like he was going to be the first Catholic president.
Scandalous,
right? And now, when you fast forward in 2016, when you ask people what was Hillary Clinton's religion, people had no idea.
Yeah. Like,
they didn't even know. She was Methodist, by the way, in case people don't know that. So, but interesting, as we think about the current Democratic candidates were talking very little about their religious affiliation.
Oh, interesting. That's not where I thought you were going to take it. Okay.
But no. Well, where did you think I was going to take it? No, but I mean, we're not really talking about, I mean, it's all about policy, right? It's like, where do they stand on healthcare? Where do they stand on this? Where do they stand? We're not really talking about presidential politics and their, you know, what their religious affinity is. Although one of them just did a big speech at, Cory Booker just did a speech in a faith.
What's Marianne Williamson's religious affiliation?
I don't know. That would be interesting. I need to look that up. I think if Oprah had a religion, she would probably be that one. Uh-huh. Sorry to all the Marianne Williamson lovers out there. Not to be a hater, but anyway. So, okay. Well, going back to our list, what's our last other? Is that the last one?
That was the last point of that essay. But so next I wanted to kind of talk about, do you think that the use of religious imagery impacts, well, what's supposed to be separation of church and state?
I think it definitely muddies the water, don't you? Yeah. I mean, I think it certainly creates ambiguity mm-hmm. in that space. So many people tout about, you know, the separation of church and state, separation of church mm-hmm. and state, the removal of religious items off of public spaces, but yet there is no separation of church and state when it comes to football, right? Although I don't know, do they pray at football games? Not as a group, we don't pray as football. No, we don't. No, we don't. No, we don't. Not certainly not in the NFL, but it's definitely an interesting question. What do you think?
I think it does impact, and it's blurred the lines a lot. It's made it okay to give a speech and say God wouldn't want this, even though what God would want should have no place in your political and policy.
Well, moreover, how do you know what God wants, right? Like, how did you become the God authority? Which, you know, when I think about Huckabee, because he's actually a reverend, right?
Huckabee.
What did I say?
Huckleberry Finn.
What did I say? Huckleberry? Did I say Huckleberry? Oops. My bad.
I was like, Mark Twain? That's a whole other conversation.
I got convoluted. I'm sorry. I think I'm like post-traumatic, his daughter being the press secretary syndrome. Anyway, but yeah, because he's a religious figure in of sense, right? And he often evokes religion in his speech. I have to go pick up some of his mailers and find out if he does it in the imagery as well.
Mm. Well, that's another thing. While I was kind of looking around online at essays and stuff, do you think that the word God is imagery?
The word God.
The word God on something, or in God we trust, or...
That's funny, because I always think of it as language. I don't think of it as imagery. But I could see the argument of how just invoking the words...
Seeing the word printed on paper
itself
is imagery.
And, you know, that's funny, because I was in a local city council election, and the opponent of our client... did like a letter to the citizens on the back of his mailer. Mm-hmm. And on there, he said something like, God bless you, but it was actually specifically Jesus Christ. So he said something like, Christ be with you and God bless you, or something along that lines, right? And I remember reading it and being like, yeah, it was like kind of intense. And I was like, well, okay, he's just ostracized all of the Jews in the district, number one. Mm-hmm. And it bothered me. And come to think of it, now that you say this, I'm thinking, yeah, like just seeing the word Jesus or seeing the word God is almost, it's imagery, right? Yeah. It because the word itself has meaning. Well, every word has meaning, but in political speech and on a political mailer.
Hearing that word or seeing it, does that also invoke the divinity of the message and immunity from criticism? Like, just by saying the word God, is that like the magic ticket?
Right. So many politicians tend to, you know, end their speech with God bless America, mm-hmm. that it's become cliche. So I think God Bless America.
Did you see that movie with Chris Rock when he was the president? And at the end, because his opponent would always say, God bless America, and nowhere else. And then he kind of went off and was like, God has blessed America. What about God bless Mexico and God bless Africa? And
God bless the world.
Pretty much. And it was kind of like the turning moment, like the actualization.
But I do think that God bless America has kind of become cliche. Uh-huh. So that in itself, in that instance, I think God has lost its more profound meaning because it's become cliche-ous, mm-hmm. right? So that it's like, God bless America, kind of anyone can say that, and it doesn't really have any religious implications than to say, you know, I'm running for, you know, city council and God bless you. Or, you know, I stand with God when I run for city council. That takes on like a whole different meaning.
Does it to you or does it to everyone?
Oh, I think it does. It certainly takes on a meaning to me that's negative, but you know.
We've become a little desensitized.
Yeah.
Just because we see it, we write it, it's there. But if you're not constantly exposed to that and you're listening to a speech from someone running for office and you hear them say, God bless you, you're like, oh, how nice.
Yeah, well, I come from a Mexican family. We're being blessed by God like 5 times a day, every day, right? So it's like, oh, just another blessing from God. Got it, you know. But I do, for me personally, I do find it a little problematic when in political messaging, like mail, when they start using very religious language, because it upsets me because it's usually done by my opponent, right? Because it's something that I wouldn't do. And so when an opponent does it, I think it does kind of create a bit of a conundrum. Like you say, like if I attack this individual, can I even attack them for like using God? So then suddenly it becomes like I'm attacking this opponent.
Well, then
opponent,
if you're attacking their policies, right, you're then attacking God.
Right. And or even worse, like I'm attacking them for using God. Mm-hmm. So then now that puts me in a space where, oh, what? So now people can't talk about God, right? So it's almost like you can't touch it,
and
right?
Then you get the whole religious liberties.
Right. So it's like I can't attack them for invoking God because then that makes me seem like on anti-God.
Yeah.
And then if I attack the policies that they are purporting to be blessed or given the okay
from the Bible,
Bible and God, then, you know, by way of what you were saying earlier, that I'm somehow going against what God wants for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about the use of Christian imagery versus Jewish imagery and maybe the lack of Muslim and other Eastern religions?
You know, I was remembering watching some news stories about the immigration and the separation of families of the children. Mm. It's not really the use in politics, but certainly it was in the telling of the story of what was going on. And they had this little kid, and they lifted the sleeve of the kid's arm, and in black Sharpie, they had written numbers on the little boy's arm. Mm-hmm. Because to identify the child as they were being separated from the parents. And I saw that and I was like horrified. Like it immediately brought to me that had a meaning beyond the immigration crisis, mm-hmm. beyond what was at hand. And it, for me, really invoked the Holocaust in mm-hmm. my mind, the imagery of it. And so I was a little taken aback, and it really, that whole story took on to me a whole other meaning than it would have otherwise. As we were leading up to the show.
So do you think seeing those numbers on the child's arm was, where did you see it? Was it just like
It was a news story.
Do you think the news station was using that to invoke the Holocaust by showing like a zoomed in picture of numbers on the arm, because that is what that means to most people?
Yeah, but in that case, I think they were just reporting what was going on. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know that they were attaching meaning. Now, if a person who was running for office chose to use that imagery in a commercial, then mm-hmm. to me that would be clear that they were invoking a Jewish
relating.
Oh, and in this case, I don't even know if that's even a, I mean, obviously it's a Jewish, the Jewish Holocaust, but I think it has a universal meaning.
People weren't the only ones.
Right.
Taken in.
Yeah, it's like we all understand what that looks like. As we were leading up to the show, I was reminded that there was an image of Hillary Clinton where they were saying, I think it was a Twitter or an Instagram or something, and they had done a photo of her, and in a little box next to her face, they had written something, but that box was actually in the shape of the Star of David. And then they started, apparently there was some like pushback on that, mm-hmm. and then they re-released, and this was an attack on Hillary, and then they re-released it as a circle instead of the Star of David. So clearly the Star of David, you know, had meaning, that additional meaning that even the people using it realized, oh, this is attaching a meaning that necessarily
they didn't want to attach to it.
Right. They didn't want to attach to it. So they ended up taking it off.
Yeah.
But it's, and when we talk about use of religious imagery of in the Muslim community, I mean, that is such a sensitive topic.
Yeah. I feel like extremely it's rarely used, or if it is, it's negative. And even like when we make happy holiday graphics for some of our clients, we'll do happy Easter, happy Passover, happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, but like never a happy Eid.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that is,
or whatever you wish people doing.
I know that's kind of like, what are you even doing? Which is why we always talk about how it's important to have diversity on campaigns, because mm-hmm. they can teach us the proper language and how we address these topics. But I think a lot of candidates want to be able to express the religion or share with people the religious beliefs that they have, right? Mm-hmm. To say, look, I am part of a faith community, and this is the faith community that I'm in, whether it's Catholic or Methodist or Jewish or Muslim or whatever. But also, to the extent, like, how much are you a Christian running for office? Are you a candidate who just happens to be a Christian, right?
Yeah.
Or I feel fill in the blank with whatever religion.
Like,
right?
I start to get uneasy when it feels like pandering. Like,
yeah.
When you take it too far. Like, this is disingenuous, and that's not cool.
And what is pandering versus authenticity? Like, what's
Where's
the line?
Line?
Where is the line? Yeah, it's very interesting. Any other essays that you found, Millennial? Was that pretty much...
No. The essays ended a while ago. The rest were my questions.
Oh, your questions. Do you have any other questions that
I
you
don't.
Ponder? Do you think millennials are less religious or less likely to invoke their religion or wear their religion on their sleeve? Or
I think it depends what party.
So do you think millennials look at candidates sort of with a religious lens? Do you think that's part of their evaluation as they look at candidates?
I don't. Even as a practicing Catholic, I don't. I feel like, I don't know, religion or just seeing the name of God, like, I know that it doesn't equal policies that will equate to my religious values. Like, I mean, if they did, we wouldn't have hungry people, no one would be homeless, and we'd have a lot more compassion for the sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think either party is doing a very good job of that right now.
Yeah. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Nuns on a Bus as part of this podcast, because, my comadre, my other comadre, Patricia, who was kind of made me aware of Nuns on the Bus, which are this group of nuns mm-hmm. who get on a bus and they travel across the country and, really pushing for social justice issues. They did it around immigration and then around other things, mm-hmm. but clearly assigning meaning to issues and invoking morality and God mm-hmm. on how you should stand on some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, for what I can see, extremely successful action that they take, and they take this bus all over the country, and they've taken it right up to the White House, and it's for me, I think, I don't know what it is about nuns, like, it's like
just
super
about
powerful
to ask you about the credibility of nuns, because I feel like inside the Catholic faith, like, nuns even have a bit more like credibility or trustworthiness than priests because of all the scandals that have happened and everything that we've seen. But like,
Nuns are there.
And they're hardcore.
Yeah. And it's like, if it's so when a nun speaks up, and that partially, also might be sort of when we think of Mother Teresa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sort of borrowing from that imagery, borrowing from that faith leader, that we, she becomes a universal context for what, who and what nuns are and what they do in our community. But yeah, there's something about the nuns that are particularly powerful, that I think they bring a certain credibility to an issue that otherwise wouldn't. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, I think that wraps up this week of Viva Politics Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Viva Politics Pod. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Viva Politics. And if you have any topic ideas or just anything you want to talk to us about, send us a DM. We'll answer. So, and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on an episode. We release new episodes every Monday.
Great. Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.